The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. We are live to you from New York City today. We are the first and number one global fintech radio show. I have with me in the studio today, Penny Crosman from American Banker. Welcome back, Penny.
Hello, thank you.
And we're going to get through some of the headlines for fintech this week. But before we get to that, we'll do our obligatory conference announcements. What did JP or Sam say we'd become in terms of conference? We're like what was the term he used, Rachel?
We're the Groupon of conferences.
The Groupon of conferences. Okay, so Money 2020 Europe is on next week. We're pleased to announce that NTT Data is sponsoring Provoke Media, the parent company for Breaking Banks, FinTech 5, and our other podcasts. We're going to be at Money 2020 Europe, and we will be at the pod. The pod is the place to come and find us. We'll be there podcasting from the event. We'll be talking to the key speakers and attendees. We will see you there in the main hall. Finovate, of course, returns to New York City September 11th through 14 with an expanded Finovate Fall. You can register for that at fall2017.finovate.com. Sorry, what was that?
Well, we also have our Paything conference mid-September in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be discussing interesting payment-related issues.
Okay. So, all right, great. Okay. and then you can use the promotional code BREAKINGBANKS20 to save on the Finovate Fall. And registration's also begun for BAI Beacon in Atlanta on October 4th and 5th. Now, they've got Matteo Rizzi, our good friend, who's going to be at Beacon, and you'll get a discount code if you use the code B32 on registration. Now, if you look at my personal Twitter feed at Brett King, you'll see I tweeted out today about the scholarship that BAI Beacon is running. So check out their scholarship, which they're inviting people to come along to Beacon. You can get sponsored there if you're interested as well. There's a bunch of people doing these. It suddenly seems like, you know, things have gone quiet for a little while, but suddenly these fintech startup things seem to be emerging again. Swift has announced a 200,000 euro competition to pull into Swift. Visa's doing a $100,000 fintech startup comp for Middle East. So Penny, this, it seems like we thought it was going to go quiet for a while.
It's the whole fintech phenomenon.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, $100,000 is not a ton of money for these organizations.
Yeah.
But
not enough to get me out of bed in the morning.
I mean, honestly, my first reaction to Swift was it sounded a little desperate.
Yeah.
But, you know, just trying to get people to work with it.
You know what they should have done? They should have called it blockchain.
Right.
Or made it an ICO.
Everything,
right?
Blockchain.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Swift's thing is interesting, but of course, they're just building their side of it.
Right.
And each company has to build its own app that will kind of work with their system. So I gather not everybody wants to have to build their own. So if some of these fintechs would step in and create something interesting, it would help them a lot.
Absolutely.
You know? That's their thing that provides visibility to your payments. So if you send your payment to some obscure country and it goes through 16 banks, you can see exactly where it is, and you could see, you know, what you're going to have to, what fees are going to be, et cetera.
Yeah. It's interesting to see it sort of coming back. Mm-hmm. But did you see there's also some research that came out today from Global Payments Innovation Jury as a survey of 70 executives from 37 countries. And it shows that, you know, the China effect in terms of payments there is this is where it's all happening. If you want to look at the future of payments, you need to look at China. It's not, you know, we used to say America has the most advanced banking system in the world and all that. That's no longer clearly the case. When you look at China, I don't know if you've seen the stats, but 92% of mobile payments go through 10 cents in a WeChat network and Alipay, you know, Ant Financial's Alipay network, 92% of mobile payments. I mean, UnionPay, the banks, none of those guys are just even, you know, remotely competitive in these new payment schemas. It really, you know, now you see Amazon with the purchase of Whole Foods. You see they've got their cashback card. You see Apple Pay going to launch their own debit card or debit facility, you know, hooked into the wallet. We start to see the same sort of thing emerging here. Should banks in the US be as suitably concerned as banks in China are? Because the outcome of this mobile payment shift in China today is if you're a bank holding deposits, they're 40% greater risk today than they were 10 years ago not because of bank competitors, because of these two technology companies.
Well, I definitely think they see a, you know, the banks here see a, maybe not a threat, but I think they're sort of weary of losing a lot of their customers, especially younger customers on the payment side to like Venmo and PayPal and companies like that. Yep. And I think that last week they officially launched Zelle, which is their P2P network.
Right.
And I think they are very much hoping that they can kind of win some of these people back. They really want to start building that brand. You know, it's short for Gazelle, and they're trying to
really
you know, speed.
Of course, I never heard that before.
Of course, then PayPal announced last week that they are speeding up Venmo. So they're going to try to have their payments, instead of taking a day or two, to only take about 30 minutes. So that'll take some of the edge away from the banks. But yeah, I definitely think they see the banks here see a threat.
I saw a really cute poem on Zelle. I'm just trying to find it now on Twitter, but my Twitter's running slow. But I'll see if I can find that before we end the show, because that was really funny. Did you see the trending news today is that some exploding cream dispenser killed a French fitness blogger?
Oh, no.
That's the big news today that's trending on Twitter.
Oh, that's really bizarre.
Yeah,
I can't even picture how that could happen.
It was described as a domestic accident.
Not sure we want to know the details.
No, but
how cream could kill
a whipped cream dispenser was under high pressure with gas in a metal container anyway.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But
brutal.
So she got creamed. Boom,
that's
boom.
Terrible.
Sorry.
Well, the other thing
I like this. You know, see, I've been doing this funny news thing lately. And I just want to have some fun with this.
It's like your stand-up comedy.
It's my stand-up routine, yeah.
Here.
Boom, boom.
The other thing in the survey you mentioned is that Europe now is number two in payments innovation, according to the survey. And it leapfrogged like nine other it leapfrogged the other continents.
Yep.
And so that was kind of, and I think they chalk a lot of that up to the progressive regulatory environment.
Well, yeah, and so this is where actually Europe, I think, has an advantage with this, with real-time payments and you know, and so forth. Europe's just able to mandate that. It's much more difficult to do that in the US because of the federal state system, of course. But, you know, we are a global show, Breaking Banks, and so we're waving the flag for our fans, you know, out in places like India and China and elsewhere, because it's good. The US just has to get its act into gear. I think maybe the administration was simplifying regulation, but I think what's happening right now is they're simplifying regulation for big banks. Right, but there's not a lot of the friction in the system. I don't see any evidence that the friction's being attacked.
No,
right
I don't
now.
Think there is any such thing as simplifying regulation, because anything they take away, they're going to add on a lot of other layers of complexity.
Yeah, so. True. All right, well, let's get into the main body of the show then. We are very fortunate this week to have with us the CEO and founder of Abra Global, Bill Barhide. I think, is that how I pronounce your name, Bill?
That's it. All right.
Good. Very good. Now, Bill, of course, is before Abra, was a co-founder of Boom Financial, and he's the chairman there. He gave the first TED Talk on Bitcoin back in 2012, which it was very early in the cycle. We won't ask him how much Bitcoin he's holding. But, of course, the reason Abra is significant is while now suddenly cryptocurrencies are very popular and so forth, Abra is a smartphone app that allows cross-border transactions. It's a non-custodial Bitcoin wallet. And you can see the value of your funds in any currency you choose, and you can send money from one customer to another on this peer-to-peer network via the Bitcoin blockchain. So this is it's 100% peer-to-peer. There's no middleman in the middle. It sits on top of this blockchain tech. In fact, Abra was one of the first companies to leverage blockchain as a peer-to-peer cross-border payments network in this respect. So that's pretty significant given that now we've got so much attention on the blockchain. So, Bill, tell us a story about the foundation of Abra and why you chose blockchain and the the Bitcoin architecture to build on top of.
Yeah, thanks for that. So my vision was really to find a way to be able to send money between any two phone numbers in the world. I wanted to be able to, originally this was going back to feature phone days where I wanted to be able to send a text message from my phone in the U.S. to a phone in India and somehow have money just show up in the person's hand in India. And I fought this battle for over a decade trying to partner with banks, trying to partner with other money service businesses, MSPs, trying to get my own licensing, raising tens of millions of dollars in capital trying to solve the problem. And the regulatory hurdles, the technology hurdles, the licensing hurdles, the capital hurdles of being able to deploy a single solution globally to solve this problem were simply untenable. And about 3 years ago, right around the time I gave the, well, a little bit after that, but I gave the TED Talk you mentioned, I started doing some research, and I figured out that this new cryptocurrency technology, which I've been studying for actually a few years before I even had the idea for Abra, could actually solve the problem if somehow you could manage to hide away all of the complexity that comes along with using cryptocurrency. In other words, can you actually design a global money transfer and payment product where the average consumer doesn't have to know what a private key is? They don't have to understand Bitcoin if they don't want to. They can if they do. But effectively, from their perspective, it looks like they're sending euros and the recipient is receiving RMB. And they don't even have to know that Bitcoin or blockchain was used in the middle to move the money. The complexity in making that work turned out to be enormous. But the benefit is we now have the world's first.
Because you've got to have a virtual exchange. You've got to still do all the banking stuff that's required for taking money in. And you're operating multiple jurisdictions with a lot of different criteria and legal requirements. So where are you based now? I mean, what's your geographical coverage?
So we're based in Mountain View near Google headquarters. We have staff in the Philippines and in Mexico. And we're, our goal is to operate in every country in the world. And to do that, we have lots of partners all over the place that help us facilitate getting the money on and off the phone. Our strategy is very exchange-centric. So as you know, there are exchanges operating in over 100 countries to facilitate the buying and selling of digital currencies, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other digital currencies. Those companies have done a lot of the heavy lifting of being compliant locally, dealing with licensing issues, and integration into the local banking system. So Abra is able to take advantage of that network of companies that are out there to build effectively a global network of partners that allow us to facilitate money movement in and out of the system without Abra having to partner directly with the bank or partner or go out and get all these licenses and heavyweight compliance infrastructure that you were alluding to earlier.
So what are you just using the standard Bitcoin architecture, or have you done your own blockchain implementation on top of that?
It uses the Bitcoin blockchain, but in a very unique way because of the way that we're able to protect the value of the consumer's funds. So if you deposit 100 euros into Abra using, let's say, an external Bitcoin wallet, you could actually fix the value of that Bitcoin in euros. Or if you load $250 via your U.S. bank account and our exchange partner into your Abra wallet, you can actually fix the value to stay at $250. And there's some magic behind the scenes that Abra does to make all that work. But effectively, it is riding on top of the standard Bitcoin blockchain.
So one of the things I was interested in is you guys have done some really interesting innovations around this, including the fact that you had a different take on tellers. And you've now implemented this in 170 cities. So what is a human ATM?
Yeah, that's one of the other breakthroughs that we had to solve for was not only how do you deal with the bank consumer, but how do you deal with the cash consumer? Now, in the traditional money service business world, Western Union, MoneyGram, they have what they call agents. And those agents are acting on behalf of Western Union, who is effectively taking possession of consumer funds, and hence the term agent. In the case of Abra, we came up with this idea of an Abra user who could also become effectively a teller for other users in the system, meaning that you could buy and sell the digital currency on or off your phone, which effectively means deposit or withdrawal. And we use the term teller explicitly because these are not agents of Abra. They're actually buying and selling the digital currency directly on or off their own phone. In a peer-to-peer manner. And in the vast majority of places on the world, that's a completely unregulated transaction. Most regulators would see that as me handing you a $10 bill and you giving me two fives in exchange. And there are exceptions to that, but by and large, it's an unregulated transaction.
So, how did you come up with the idea for this? Where did this all start to turn humans into ATMs?
Yeah, I'd love to say it was an epiphany, but as I said, it's kind of the result of 10 years of just hard labor trying to operate in the traditional MSB and banking world to facilitate cross-border transactions. And what I realized was that you needed to figure out a way to eliminate the middleman to make these transactions work at global scale. If you look at this, as you mentioned here in the introduction,
so I think we've lost Bill there, but if you guys want to check out Abra, you can go to www.goabra.com and check out the stuff that they've been doing. There's also a lot of good conversation on the Abra site about altcoins and so forth in respect to that. So that's good. Penny, you know, in terms of sort of this cross-border stuff and what we've seen lately with blockchain and Bitcoin and the traction that altcoins are getting, Ether and so forth, it you know, the question of whether or not the blockchain is going to be of impact on the global banking system, I think we've sort of put that one to bed already. But we're sort of seeing a lot of these hybrids and different models and so forth. Of course, understanding that blockchain is just a distributed ledger, this seems to be a shift where if you want highly decentralized, distributed systems that work very efficiently online, you have to go away from the standard, you know, firewalled bank and regulated government-based payment ecosystems. They're two very different worlds, aren't they?
It does seem like there is kind of a migration. I think Ripple has made, a fair amount of traction. There are a few other providers too that are, you know, particularly going after this issue of remittances, where people need to send money back. People who move from, say, the Philippines to the United States or to another country, and then want to send money back home, and they're paying these huge fees. I think there are a lot of companies like this that are looking to the blockchain as a way to, provide that kind of service much more cheaply. The thing, I think the Abra concept is fascinating, of having humans act as tellers. I guess I wonder, how do you establish trust in a network like that? And how can you be sure that these people will act the way they should and not charge too much for their service. I just think it's, and I haven't tried to look into that myself, but I just think that's a really, it's a fascinating concept because of course they don't have branches, they don't have the Western Union offices, so they need some way of providing cash to people. So
it's a novel approach.
Yes.
Have we got you back now, Bill?
I think so.
Good.
So I apologize. The trials and tribulations of building a global company and living from airport to airport.
I've been there. I've done 16 countries this year already, so I'm with you in spirit.
Yeah, and so about the trust question, which has been really a fascinating topic to see evolve on its own as we're building out the teller network. There's a few phenomenon that have really helped us build out the system. One is this OTC market for digital currencies, this over-the-counter trading. It's now a multi-billion dollar business that didn't exist even 5 years ago, really, and that's people meeting in person to trade Bitcoin and other digital currencies. And we get lots of people from this kind of local Bitcoin OTC market signing up to be average tellers because our model takes the traditional OTC model, which assumes that both parties are interested in Bitcoin, and blows it up to a much wider audience because now one of the counterparties to the transaction has no idea that they're even dealing with Bitcoin. And that gives them access to a much wider audience for the transaction that they're already doing. In other cases, we are signing up existing companies who serve the remittance business who also want to get into buying and selling digital currency at the point of sale to facilitate these deposits and withdrawals. So, for example, in the Philippines, we have, I believe, a network of 1,500 locations. It's just one of our partners who also provides traditional remittance services but also acts as average tellers throughout all 1,000-plus locations that they have. And the consumers love the fact that they can just walk in, provide their phone number, and leave the store either with cash in hand or with digital cash on their Abra wallet.
Yeah. All right. So now you currently use Bitcoins, but as you said, there's a big business now in what we talk about altcoins. So these are all the cryptocurrencies that aren't Bitcoin, essentially. So what do you guys do in terms of integration with other cryptocurrencies beyond Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's a good question. We haven't announced anything in terms of integration with other digital currencies for a couple of reasons. Up until recently, most of the alternative currencies didn't have the market capitalization required to make the currency available to millions of people. That's changing now. Obviously, Ethereum has been on quite a tear lately. The second issue we have is programmability, right? The underlying assumption in the Abra technology/architecture is that there is a basic scripting function that is there that makes the network and the digital currency itself programmable. And Bitcoin, up until now, has really been the only digital currency asset class that fulfilled both of those requirements, meaning a high market cap and also programmable money. And that's changing, and we're getting a ton of interest in other currencies, but right now our big bet is on Bitcoin.
Fair enough. So what have you guys got planned for this year in terms of your expansion and you've got any new products lined up or what's happening with Abra for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so we're super busy. We're 40 plus people now. Our engineering team is cranking out some awesome stuff. We've got lots of announcements coming up for the rest of this year. My head of marketing says I don't do a good job of keeping my mouth shut, so I'm going to practice that right now and just promise that there's some really cool stuff coming out and some industry-breaking stuff, I think, as well. We're very focused on international expansion, I'll tell you that. We spend a big chunk of our time creating a better user experience in more countries. And so that's something that you'll definitely be seeing announcements on. But in addition to that, there's some really cool product stuff we're working on.
Now, playing this out over the next 5-10 years, How do you think things like, you know, cross-border transactions and stuff like that is going to work in 10 or 20 years' time? Obviously, we're moving away from sort of the centralized systems that we've seen develop over the years. And I was just talking with Penny about that while we lost you. But, you know, in 10 or 20 years, you know, how's money movement going to look with the sort of technologies we're developing now?
I think it's going to look the same way that WeChat looks in China and Venmo works in the U.S. And companies like Abra are going to make it possible to do those kind of social payments at cross-border global scale that has been impossible up until now because everything was using either Swift rails or proprietary FX and wire services that are out of reach for a traditional consumer transaction. Nobody sends $10 using the banks from the U.S. to the U.K. It's untenable, right? I mean, the cost would be more than the amount of money you're sending. And that's crazy in 2017. And so I think what you're going to see is you're going to see Abra and competitors to Abra providing this kind of social peer-to-peer payment the same way we do in domestic instances now.
All right. So, you know, where are your travels taking you right now in terms of the business and what you're doing?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time. Well, I'm actually on a plane back, or getting on a plane soon back home for a few days. Been spending a lot of time in Mexico, India, China, Europe. You know, it's I flew I think about 1 million miles over the last 20 months ish. Just getting all of the partners teed up and the deals and the meeting. I spend a lot of time meeting with central banks, educating them on the technology and understanding how they should look at these non-custodial technologies as they're formulating regulation. And that keeps me very, very busy, obviously.
So I just have one final question for you before I ask you for how people can find out more about Abra. But I heard a rumor you used to work for the CIA. Is that true?
I did, actually. I was 19 when I started. I worked on my first job was working on secure messaging systems for agency sites around the world, and it opened my eyes to a lot of things. It also opened my eyes to why I don't want to work for the government anymore. But I learned
a
ton.
Is that history informed part of the way you built Abra?
Maybe. I mean, I think my history with the banks has probably informed it more. But I am, I'm an American and I love America, but I believe in extreme checks and balances and, you know, I mean, extreme with an emphasis on that word. And so maybe I have a bit of a bias in watching how the system works from within. But by and large, I'm all about the consumer and less about, you know, what governments will and won't do. But it was a great time in my life. I learned a lot. Even 20-plus years later, I still have friends, both at NASA and the CIA, and they're really good people. And some of them are incredibly devoted to what they do, earning peanuts compared to what, you know, you and I are able to make in the private world.
Yeah, I don't make as much money as you did, but actually, I don't know, maybe that's true. But okay, so where can people find out about Abra?
Sure, abra.com. We just acquired abra.com, by the way, so that was a fun process. If you've ever had to buy a four-letter domain. But you can go to abra.com. You can download us from both the Apple iOS and Android Google Android Play stores. Just to do a search for Abra. And you'll see us there, or just go to the website and you can click there to the download link directly from abra.com.
So I'm going to annoy you here, dude, because when we bought Movin, you know, when we changed our name from Movin Bank to Movin, you know what the domain cost me to buy Movin?
What's that?
It was like $5,000. I did a really good deal on that.
Yeah, now I'm annoyed. I'm definitely annoyed now.
So
I think the escrow fee was more than that.
All right, well,
demand,
yeah. All right. Well, look, we really love what you guys are doing over there. You know, it's a really, it's one of the more mature platforms that sits on top of the blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain. And, you know, one of the great things about it is it's really contributing to financial inclusion and helping funds flow from, you know, working immigrants offshore to their families and things like that. So that's always stuff that's really important socially. So more power to you, dude. And thanks for being on Breaking Banks Day and giving us an update.
Thank you so much for having me and putting up with the noise. And yeah, and spreading the word on Abra. We really appreciate it.
Safe travels. I hope you're not flying United.
No comment.
No comment. All right. Okay, guys, listen, you're listening to Breaking Banks. We are going to be back after a quick break. And thanks for sticking with us.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
What do financial services of the future look like? Invisible yet ubiquitous, blended into our lives like air, gravity. This podcast. Temenos has specialized for 20 years in creating the best financial technology for thousands of financial institutions worldwide. Our open fintech marketplace allows millions of people to experience money in exciting new ways. Join the most vibrant financial services ecosystem in the world. Temenos, we make the money go round.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Okay, you're back with Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We are the number one global fintech radio show, and we have in the studio with us Penny Crosman. Hi, Penny.
Hello.
Hey, did you check out Wonder Woman yet, the movie?
I have not. I was not expecting that question.
No, it's not a fintech question, but yeah, we are on the AM radio band, so I can ask questions like that.
It's actually not even on my to-see list.
It's not on your radar?
Well, I mean, I've heard of it, but yeah, it's not on my must-see list.
So it's of course, it's one of the most successful, you know, DC Comics or DC Universe movies that's to date. It's been really successful. Rachel's going to jump in here. Rachel, you saw it, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it.
What did you think?
Well, I mean, it's cheesy, like any superhero movie. But what I actually thought was interesting was I was on Twitter and somebody said, "No wonder white guys feel like they can rule the world. If they go and see that every time they go to the movies, it's like feeling like you are on top of it all the time." It was brilliant. I was like, you know, if we all saw ourselves reflected that way, we would feel like we could rule the universe.
And Gal Gadot did an awesome job.
She was awesome.
Yeah, she was awesome. So,
well, now a lot of men are protesting this movie, right?
They're protesting the fact that there were women-only screenings.
Right. More power to the girls. I'm a big fan of the girls.
Yeah, get over it. Sorry.
All right. So, yeah, a little bit of a, you know, I just was wondering if you'd seen it, but it's doing really well. So it's good to see some traction on that. But let's get back to fintech. We have with us joining the show now, Shekhar Biliak. Is that how I pronounce it, Shekhar?
Yeah, almost like that. Shachar Bialik. It's an Israeli.
Bialik. Oh, yeah, okay. You said it's Israeli. So you're a fellow national of Gal Gadot, of course. See, that's the segue.
A good friend of her.
The Israeli. You know, she was in the Israeli Defense Force, and she can actually do real martial arts.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah. So. But there's a lot of fintech stuff happening in Tel Aviv in Israel right now, isn't there, Shekhar?
There is a lot of fintech going on in Tel Aviv. We're basically based in the UK, and there's much more fintech going on in the UK and in the larger continent. And it's very interesting, you mentioned it, that Europe is number two in the innovation scale, and mainly because thanks to the PSD2 and yes, different partnerships that have been developed thanks to the PSD2 itself. So it's very exciting times to be in fintech in Europe.
Absolutely. So you guys are based in London?
Yes.
Obviously you chose London. Why London versus, say, San Fran or New York?
That's a great question. So that's my fifth company. And before that, I had four other startup companies which have been successfully acquired. And they're all based in Tel Aviv, mostly around the B2B scene. I left for a year off in Singapore and France to study an MBA, but then I had this vision about what we can solve in the financial space, and the best space to do that, having researched the ecosystem, was actually in Europe, and the best place in Europe is the center, at the heart of finance, which is London. So there was no secondary question about is New York or San Francisco is better, although San Francisco has an amazing ecosystem for startups in terms of investment and talents. And when it comes to financial technology, back then London was very unique in what they could offer in terms of passporting, in terms of regulations, and also in terms of talents in the finance space.
So tell me about the formation of Curve. When did you get the idea for this? When did you kick this off? And you've been live now for what, about 18 months, I guess? Is that right?
Yeah. So actually the idea of Curve, I have a blog about it from 2006, and I truly thought that Facebook or PayPal would do something like that. And the problem that Curve is trying to solve is basically the disconnected world of finance. As a user, you are using between 6 to 12 tools, whether it's your credit cards or debit cards, different accounts and banks, if you're well-traveled, money remittance tool like Abra that we just had a great discussion on. And we're not even talking about tools like Moven, who helps you spend better and get more insights and budget better. And as a user, today, you have no more headspace to onboard other tools on your day-to-day life, and you're not even aware of the great tools that exist today. And with PSD2 coming along to Europe, there's a new fintech startups that provide a great offering every day, and everything is just too disconnected. So with Curve was about 3 years ago, saying, okay, so Facebook and PayPal did not go on this opportunity, and we believe the end game would become a convergence platform, right? Everything else in any other industry has been converged into one experience platform that lives on your mobile phone. And how come finance didn't get there? So we truly believe that the end game would be this convergence layer that will connect you to everything money. It will connect all your cards, all your accounts, all your spend into one place, allow you to access the best credit or loan deal, allow you to access the best credit card, and allow you to access the best investments or saving or everything to do peer-to-peer. And with that in mind, we rolled back, so how this product looks today and how do we start with it? And we launched Curve as the first ever mobile wallet, but with a card, with a proposition of all your cards in one, about 2.5 years ago. And the first product launch was in May last year, allowing users to download the app in the UK and basically have the first ever working all your cards in one.
This is pretty significant, because the other guys who've tried this, Plastic and Coin, failed spectacularly.
Yes.
So how did you guys succeed where they failed so spectacularly? And I don't mind saying they failed spectacularly, because I called it that they would. But you guys have something different. Yeah. Right?
So Coin did something amazingly well. They found how people had a problem that they didn't know, they have too many cards, too many things going on with their money. I want simplicity and convenience. And Coin found a very great way to market that and advertise that and communicate to users, all your cards in one. I want everything in one. Sounds clear and simple. But the problem they tried to solve is the wrong problem. The problem Coin tried to solve is your fat wallet problem. But your fat wallet is not the problem. It's the side effect of the problem. It's the side effect that you have multiple of issuers and credit providers and different technologies that want to get into your pocket, and the side effect is too many cards. And so the way they try to solve the side effect is by giving you paracetamol. And they just created a new technology which is imitating your card details at the point of sale. Not only that it's not secured, it's not aligned with the next generation EMV chip cards that coming to the market. And also it's quite complicated.
They never really had an answer for that, did they?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's also very complicated.
It took Square a considerable amount of time to adapt to that as well, but they finally got there.
Yeah, and if you think about it, it's very complicated to create such a product in such a small space, and it's going into manufacturing. So this and it's all the cars in one. It always has to work, and so if it's not working 100%.
Here's where I'm interested in your model. If I have an Amex card, for example, I can put it in Curve, and then I can use Curve and pay with my Curve, but it still processes the Amex transaction. I can get my rewards and so forth. But the interchange that that you guys would get on your card versus what I pay on the Amex, there's got to be some differential there. Do you guys take a hit on that? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so the way Curve works is it works on the MasterCard rails. That means that you can pay with any of your cards at a store that accepts MasterCard, which is basically everywhere in the world. And when we launched, we allowed users to upload their American Express. And in Europe, American Express penetration is very low, so you can hardly pay with Amex anywhere. Okay. And it allowed Amex an increased market acceptance share, and basically Amex users to basically use their Amex everywhere. But there was many challenges with allowing Amex on the platform, and mainly cost. As you said, the interchange was very high, and eventually we decided together that it will not continue to work, and we're still in the discussion to try and make it work. But the main offering of the platform, unlike in the US, here in the UK and Europe, is not about the Amex proposition. It's about all your cards, and most people don't have Amex in Europe, so that's not the major issue. The major issue in Europe is when you travel, currencies are extreme pain point, right? Because you have multiplicity of currency in very short geographical space. So we are saving users, eliminating his bank's fees, and saving users between 4% to 5% every time he spends abroad. So unlike with Abra, where you have to have a new product and upload money and transfer money to save money on FX, with Curve, it doesn't matter which underlying card you have. Whenever you shop, everywhere you shop in the world, it becomes your underlying card as if you shopped in your local currency. So you never get the FX fees or the exchange rate that your bank would originally charge you. Instead, it's 99% of the interbank rate. So that's one example of the beauty about Curve. It's also more secured. So we found out that people, when they lose their cards, they have to now call 7-8 different suppliers to cancel their cards. With Curve, you never expose the original card details. They're always back at home. So
it's like the token method.
Exactly. It's a firewall that you can lock and unlock from the app.
Now, you guys are technically still in beta, right?
Yes.
So you expect to come out of beta?
So actually, just today, we launched a PR where we put our plans to launch outside of beta into the UK and the full consumer launch by the end of the year. It's not confirmed yet by the end of the year, but it's our plans right now with the roadmap of the product. And the way we see things in the companies that you constantly in beta, because it's a payments product and it's a financial product, we need to be transparent with the users that it's a new product and it's very innovative and things can go wrong. So don't leave all your cards behind. Take one as a backup, for example, because it might go wrong today. So we're constantly in beta, making sure we're advancing the development and also aligning expectations. This is the way we think of things.
Now, you've bet your business on this need to sort of aggregate these cards and for people to have better control and better visibility on their card transactions. But clearly, you've got now in China this massive market that's moved away from plastic. What effect do you think that will have on, economies like, those in Europe and in the US, where we see a really distinct in the developed developing world, we see a distinct move away from plastic. We're not going to have the card networks develop out there. It's all going to be IP based on the phone, on top of social networks most likely, or alternative networks. So how soon before that infects the rest of the world and we see a threat to the modality of plastic?
So 5 years ago, people said between 5 to 7 years. So I'll continue with that, between 5 to 7 years. But put jokes aside, in the Western world, we use cards every day. And there's nothing wrong. They work great. The MasterCard, the Visa, and the other networks, they developed something which is very hard to imitate. And it's very reliable. So I doubt they will be replaced that easily. As much as in Africa, there's an entirely different system, and China's entirely different systems. Indeed, Alipay and WeChat are trying to come into Europe and introduce their own proprietary QR codes at the point of sale. But this is changing not only infrastructure, but more importantly, users' behavior. And it's hard to change users' behavior. I don't believe that in Europe, people will leave their cars and move to QR codes. They're more going to probably leave and move into NFC, where it's going to be still on the same rails, but just a different form factor. So the networks will be there.
Do you think the Apple Pay push will help with that?
No. So the reason, Apple Pay aren't pushing anything. Right? They're pushing through the partners, the issuers. Apple Pay are not marketing directly to the user as much as MasterCard are not marketing directly to the user. The banks are the one providing you the cards. And the reason UK is one of the most prominent adoption in Europe in terms of NFC, of contactless. And the reason that is the tube system, the TFL. So now we can use your contactless car to
the Oyster card.
Exactly. And now they allowed, instead of Oyster card, also use your own bank cards, debit cards or credit cards directly.
Can you put Oyster into Curve?
If we connect to Oyster, we can do that, but we're not connected. So the way Curve works, we can connect to multiple application providers, everything to the same platform. So we're not connected yet. But the reason is because they are deprecating, they're killing out Oyster. They're moving everything into the bank cards directly.
Exactly. Very, very interesting. Hey, I've got a question from Penny here for you.
Well, yes. I just noticed that you guys are getting money from some seed money from TransferWise, Betfair, and Google Wallet. And I'm just wondering, what's in it for them to support you? Or are they potential partners for you? Or are you already in talks with those companies?
Yeah, so it's the ex Google Wallet team and the founders of Money 2020 that invested in us. And indeed, the founders of Betfair and TransferWise were amongst our investors. And now we're about to announce round A, where two more very large banks in the UK have invested as well. The reason those parties invested is because either they believe in where we're going on the vision, or they see us as potential partners. So for example, with banks, what we look to do is we look to give our platform to banks so they can distribute it to their users, similar to what Movin did and similar to what Apple Pay are doing right now. Because we say, you're doing a great job as a bank, keeping your money safe, understanding risk and providing credit. You're not doing such a great job when it comes to experience and technology. We'll provide experience technology and you'll give it to your users, distributing your products and deepening the relationship with the user and providing real value. And when it comes to TransferWise, there's a great opportunity for us to provide our users a better ability to remit money internationally through the same Curve platform. We're not FX providers. We don't understand FX. So we can work with a great provider and do rapture on that party. So that's where it's coming from, those investors.
How big's your team now?
Quite big, I must admit. So we're 35 now, and we're going to become 50 in the next couple of months with new hires joining on board. So we increasing size quite fast, especially on the engineering team, on the growth team as well.
And so how quickly are you going to announce your Series A?
I believe in the next couple of weeks. So we're waiting for Money 2020 announcements. And then right after that, we'll announce a few cool stuff. One of the stuff, if you track in our tweet feed that we haven't announced yet but launched into our community, is a new feature called Go Back in Time, where you can shop in the past, which is pretty cool. It's the first one ever, financial time travel. So I don't know if it ever happened to you that the right card wasn't with you, or you didn't have enough money on the right card, with Curve, you can shop with any card you want and go up to 14 days later and just change the card that you paid with retrospectively. So that's quite a pretty good feature. People
and
love
have
it.
What have you called that feature? Quantum Leap, or what have you called it?
Go back in time.
Go back in time.
There and you have the flux capacitor.
Yeah, the flux capacitor. There you go.
Or 80s boys. Yeah.
Very cool. And so, in terms of this year, it sounds like you've got a pretty big year planned in terms of ramping up. How do you think the Brexit will affect your growth plans?
So that's a great question. In terms of Brexit, to audience who maybe that not familiar so much with what happens in Europe and Brexit, so there is something called licensing in Europe, where if you are sitting in the UK, you can license your passport your license technology across Europe, so you can serve anyone in the EEA region. If Brexit indeed happens and in a way that the financial passporting will not be allowed anymore, that means that any fintech company that is working in the UK will not be able to passport or serve users outside the UK. So this is the concerns we have. This is the risk we have. And the way to solve it is just to create a new license in one of the other European countries, which we already started to do, to ensure that we're ready for next year in case Brexit indeed happens in terms of financial passporting. We're ready to still serve European users.
So where else in Europe interests you? Is it, Poland has very high contactless penetration as well.
Yeah.
Where else interests you?
So we're less looking at countries where contactless penetration is pretty high, because one of our unfair advantages to the competition is that we have a plastic card that you can use anywhere regardless of contactless is accepted. The countries that are more interesting for us is countries like France or Spain, countries where credits is very high, credit consumption is very high, and the number of cards are very high. Countries where there's a lot of expats coming in and working, and because of that, they have multiplicity of cards, or they're traveling quite a lot, so they have more impact on FX. We looked at the levers of usage of the product, and we are attacking the right countries that those levers of products are more prominent.
So your objective is to sort of really try and build something that is, helps people focus less on using credit and more on just using the money they've got, or?
The focus is basically to make people better off without thinking about it, right? If you think about that, money is means to an end. What we really want to do is celebrate life. But we don't really know what's going on with our money, and that's created a lot of friction and a lot of concerns. And our job, or PFM jobs, for example, they're looking to serve these concerns by helping people budget or understanding the money much better. FX products are there to help people save money. Our job is to ensure that all the different products in the industry will automatically be available for the user without his being even aware of that. So an example is when I travel, I just get the best FX rate. There's a lot of magic happens in the back to ensure the user gets the best rate. But it doesn't need to buy a new card. Another example is that when I go and shop or for lunch with one of my colleagues for work, I then need to keep the receipt and push it to Xero or QuickBooks. With Curve, you don't have to do anything. You just need to tap that it's a business, or if it's directly from a business card, we already know. And we already connected to Xero or QuickBooks, and we will manage we'll automate and simplify the workflow for you and automatically push it to Xero. You want to spend money abroad and you have a credit card that takes a very high commission, 20% APR, very high interest rate. With Curve, you would be able to basically choose to pay this laptop instead of $500, five installments of $110 every month. I understand cash flow. I can afford $110 every month, and it's a pretty good rate compared to any other rate I have.
Right.
And all Curve will do is connect you with those providers.
That sounds like a really interesting model you've built there, Shakar. And how do people find out about Curve?
So from friends mainly, but you can go to imaginecurve.com and sign up to our beta.
Yep.
It's freely available across Europe to a community of micro businesses, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, where you can join the wait list of the consumer launch, which we hope to launch later this year.
Fantastic. Well, we'll be interested to hear your news. Hopefully it comes out. If you're at Money 2020 and you want to get the news out, then just come back on the show there. We've got the booth there at Money 2020 in Europe. So
I'll come visit again and probably we'll party at night. So no worries there.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us. That's all we have time for today on the show. I want to thank our guests, Bill Barheit and Shaka Bialik. I think I got that right. And also, thanks to Penny for joining us again in the American Bankers space here, where they very kindly lend us their space as a studio. And check out, subscribe to Breaking Banks wherever you listen to your podcasts. Go to our website to check out some of our previous episodes. But don't forget also to subscribe to Sam Moll's FinTech 5 podcast. We joke it's the FinTech 15 now. It's a profile, we're profiling all the speakers at Money 2020 in Europe, those making a splash in fintech. We are the exclusive radio show partner for Money 2020 in Europe and beyond. So hope you guys have a great weekend. If you want to hear some funny news just before we go, check out in Dubai, they have launched a robotic police officer, a RoboCop in Dubai. So check that out if you're interested in some out there news. Everything is getting automated, my friends, even banking and fintech. So that's it for Breaking Banks this week. We'll be back with you guys next week from Europe. See you later.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, for more of the latest in fintech news.